I know I don't have to tell you this, but this episode is only for educational purposes. It is not nutrition or personalized medical advice. We want you to get the most from the episode, but to keep that in mind as well. And we really hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the Quiet the Diet podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Shapiro. I am an integrative functional registered dietitian in New York City who has helped over 1,000 clients reverse their anxiety, approach their weight lovingly, and heal their digestive issues. I help clients to access liberating self-awareness through humor, compassion, and nuance. I lost 100 pounds the wrong way so that you don't have to. You know, without all the physical and psychological damage that comes along with it. Whole body health requires so much more than just going on a restrictive diet. The Quiet the Diet podcast offers a holistic look at what it takes to be your most vibrant, healthy self. I want to help you quiet the diet so you can focus on all the other parts of your amazing health and life. Welcome to the pod. I can't wait to explore the magic of functional nutrition and medicine together. One major barrier that I see with my clients is their ability to get comprehensive and functional lab testing. I am so excited to introduce our podcast sponsor for today's episode, Inside Tracker. Inside Tracker is more than just a lab company. They help to personally select the exact labs you'll need to have a really comprehensive view of your health. And they will actually send someone to your house to get those labs completed. Once those labs are completed, they will go into your Inside Tracker dashboard where you will get insights into how these labs are important and what changes you can make based on those labs. The labs that are run are extremely helpful for those who are not able to get their doctors to run every lab that they need. I've been using Inside Tracker with my clients and found amazing insights from their professionals. Inside Tracker also integrates with apps like Apple Watch and Aura. It can also integrate with your DNA testing to give you more insights on that as well. Whether you want to improve metabolism, heart health, cognition, sleep, stress levels, Inside Tracker helps to reveal the exact areas of your health that need improvement. One other barrier I found with clients outside of getting prescriptions for those lab tests is actually being able to understand and interpret. So that's why I find Inside Tracker so incredible. The Inside Tracker scientists have sifted through the research so that you don't have to. If you want to test, not guess, when it comes to your health, save 20% on all of Inside Tracker's plans with my exclusive deal. Go to insidetracker.com/quietthediet. That's insidetracker.com/quietthediet for 20% off of any Inside Tracker plan. You can find this link in the show notes. Welcome back to season 4 of Quiet the Diet. The goal of this podcast is always to look at every single topic from a nuanced and comprehensive lens. Binge eating behaviors are something that can feel really debilitating for people on a quality of life scale. They can feel uncontrollable and they can make people feel like they don't have control over their own behaviors. Because of this, the approach to binge eating needs to be really individualized. We binge eat for all different reasons. Some of us because we're hungry and don't realize it. Some of us because of emotional triggers. Some of us eat foods that are triggering and instigate binging. And the approaches we're seeing either in kind of the classical model of treatment and eating disorder clinics or online is more of an intuitive eating model or more of a liberalizing food restrictions, make sure you're not getting too hungry, and really focused on eliminating restriction in order to stop binging. What we've found in our work, in our practice, and really from the experience of our clients is that there are many people who are getting left behind in these approaches. There are people who feel as though when they have foods that are highly processed, they actually binge more. So the idea of liberalizing all food restrictions and saying, all foods fit and take that kind of restrictive piece out are finding that their binging worsens. So if this is you, I just want you to know this episode is for you. While all different approaches to binge eating are valid and there's tremendous research that backs them all up, our goal is always to help the people who feel like conventional options have not worked for. We want to be there for people who feel like they've tried everything and don't know where else to go. So I think this episode will be incredibly illuminating for people who have felt like they've kind of done intuitive eating, and which is intuitive eating is incredible, but they've done intuitive eating or they've been through conventional binge eating treatment and have not found transformation in their symptoms. So this episode is really focused on explaining what are the current treatment modalities for binge eating, what have we found feels really supportive for people, and we're going to be reporting those findings to you and talking about what's that experience of even going through a binge, what do we feel like moments before a binge, and talk about some strategies we've seen be really effective for clients, especially those who feel like no matter what they do, they're still feeling out of control and they're feeling so much shame around their binge eating. I'm just going to let the cat out of the bag. One of the main themes of this episode is that we want you to stop feeling shame around binge eating. And if we can look at binge eating as this method of preservation for us, this way that our body likes to keep us safe and happy and feeling balanced, our binge eating can transform. This is a killer episode. That's why it's the first episode. And I can't wait to see you in there. Welcome back to season four of Quiet the Diet.
Yay.
Oh, I'm so excited to be back, Nikki. We had a decent sized break between seasons, and I feel that people were very patient. So we have to give them a supreme season this time.
Oh, 100%. I think there was a reason why we had a little bit of a hiatus, and it was to gear up, get everything together. The season's really, really good. I'm really excited about it.
So in today's episode, we kind of want to go back to Quiet the Diet roots, and really what the goal of this podcast is always to look at nutrition from a nuanced perspective and to look at kind of what are the different models of treatment that different types of practitioners are using. And what we've found is that one area where there seems to be vast differences in treatment is eating disorders and more specifically binge eating. So this is something that is near and dear to the work that we do, and what we really love to support our clients on is binge eating. And what we have seen in recent years is really a divergence from that classic eating disordered model that we would see in those eating disorder facilities when it comes to binge eating.
Mm-hmm. So, and this is the thing that's really tough is I think that when you're in an eating disorder facility, it's really kind of like a one size fits all approach. And again, I mean, sometimes that's just in a clinical setting how things have to be done sometimes because you have a certain amount of patients, you have to, you know, really make sure that everything's kind of laid out ahead of time and, you know, structured in that way. But the experience that everyone has with binge eating is very individualized. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly personal. And so really having an individualized approach is key.
100%. So Nikki, you have worked in your internship in an eating disorder facility. It was an outpatient inpatient mm-hmm. facility, right? So part-time people would come in during the day to get treatment. They would not live there, though.
No one would live there. Yeah. Okay. It was coming in from during the day for a certain period of time.
What have you seen in your experience, the treatment to binge eating within eating disorder facilities, let's say outpatient eating disorder facilities? Mm-hmm.
You know, what's actually really interesting is that the treatment was the same between both restrictive eating disorders and bulimia and binge eating disorder.
So I need to repeat what you just said because it's really important for listeners to hear. The treatment for restrictive eating disorders in a clinical setting, inpatient or a part-time outpatient setting for eating disorders is the same for restrictive eating disorders as it is for binge eating disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's interesting because I think as people are listening to this and hearing this, they think those things feel opposite. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the treatment approaches that they apply to both restrictive eating disorders and binge eating disorder?
Well, so in a clinical setting, they actually look at, and again, looking at binge eating as a form of a restrictive eating disorder in the sense that they would say that all binges are kind of born out of restriction, mm-hmm. either physical or mental restriction. Now, a lot of binges can and are, you know, derived from restrictive origin, but at the same time, you're kind of discounting the experience of people who are like, I'm confused. I ate my set meals for the day. I'm getting in my protein. I have all of these nutrients and I'm still binging.
I'm going to walk it back from that point. So let's lay the foundation for everyone, for people listening for the first time and maybe never even receiving treatment for binge eating, but binge eating being something that they know that they're doing. Mm. Before we even go into the kind of three different approaches that we lay out, how would you define binge eating, Nikki?
So this is also, again, something that I feel like might not be the clinical definition, but I would say that binge eating, now I think the clinical definition includes more of like a set amount that you're eating at one time, more than the, you know, like a quote unquote normal amount per sitting. I look at it as any type of loss of control while you're eating, feeling like you're eating out of something that's kind of gnawing at you, like not hunger, but feeling like you're like a loss of control around eating.
A loss of control is how you would define binge eating. And also maybe a sense of urgency that comes along with it. Yeah, I would define it in the same way. It's really if you're eating something more than you intended to for a purpose more than physiological hunger, it feels like. Yeah. So when it comes to binge eating, historically in eating disorder facilities and through dietitians' work, there's been one predominant model of treatment. Mm-hmm. And that model is that the more that you restrict food, the more that you'll binge those same foods, right? We've seen this on Instagram infographics. It'll say the more that you cut out bread, the more that you eat cake or something like that, or the more that you cut out potatoes, you know, the more that you cut out carbs, the more you binge those foods. There is really good science to support that food restriction can lead to binge eating behaviors because of this psychological phenomenon that when we feel like we can't have food, we urgently want to get food. Mm-hmm. And it's not only the rebellious nature, it's really our survival mechanism that if we're told we can't have food, our body's like, well, I'm going to get that food to make sure that I'm okay and covered. So certainly restriction can lead to binging. That's a well-established relationship. It is real. What we're going to talk about in this episode is the fact that this model of binge eating that we see in allopathic dietitians' offices, in eating disorder clinics, is not a one size fits all. And that there are many people who have binge eating disorder and their triggers are not actually from restriction. Mm-hmm. Their triggers are from something else. So let's bucket our first approach to binge eating as the kind of classic restriction equal binge model. The next model we're going to talk about, I think quite exhaustively in this episode, is what happens when people feel uncomfortable inside of their bodies and then utilize food as a tool to deal with that discomfort in their bodies. So the second approach to supporting people through binge eating is actually nervous system support and stress support. And that's how we would support people because binge eating is, as we'll walk through, a very involved biological and chemical process of what's going on inside the body. So a lot of people choose food as a really supportive tool to feel better. Mm-hmm. What I think is really important for our listeners to hear is also that binge eating feels good. Temporarily. It releases a tremendous amount of positive chemicals in our body. If you are feeling down, it quite literally can make you feel not down. There's a reason why people do it. It's not to sabotage themselves or torture themselves. People choose binge eating because binge eating is a survival mechanism. And we acknowledge that. So if you kind of deal with the threat level and deal with the incoming sensory inputs and discomfort that's driving you to binge, it can transform binge eating behaviors. So that's model two. We'll call it the nervous system model. Model one is the restrict equal binge model, which would, the answer would be liberalizing food restrictions. Model two is the nervous system model. And then Nikki, tell us about model three.
So model three would be kind of based on the fact that, you know, we live in a world that has a lot of new age foods, let's say, like foods that if we went to a farm, they would not really be found on that farm. It's stuff that's kind of maybe made in a lab or has some different stabilizers or additives. And again, like in a small dose, maybe our body can process and handle these things just fine. When we're eating them on to the magnitude that we are in our food system, and also kind of tying back to the nervous system model in a way that isn't very conducive to appropriate digestion and absorption, that also triggers us. These foods are, they spend billions of dollars on research and development trying to get these foods to be so hyper palatable that we, when we start eating them, we don't want to stop. So maybe it's a combination of flavors, or maybe it's certain additives in the food, but we, they're literally manufactured so that we want to keep eating them. And it's kind of overriding those, when we talk about those like intuitive hunger fullness cues, these foods are overriding those cues. And it's really not possible a lot of the time to eat them intuitively to a certain extent. So in this third model, we're really looking at reducing our intake of these foods, prioritizing whole foods so that we're getting lots of nutrients, vitamins, and minerals that are helping to create neurotransmitters that are, you know, keeping our nervous system happy and keeping us, you know, feeling good. And then also, you know, so then we're not kind of being driven toward these foods. So it's kind of reducing those foods and prioritizing whole foods.
So if people are listening and hearing what the subtext of what we're talking about, one treatment for binge eating is the opposite to another treatment for binge eating, which means one of the treatments says you have to liberalize all food restrictions. You can't cut any foods out. The other treatment for binge eating that people use in model three that we were talking about is that you actually have to limit certain foods in order to stop binge eating. So this is where it becomes very confusing for people, because we hear you have to go sugar-free, you have to, you know, quit sugar altogether to stop binge eating. And there's people who legitimately have better, healthier relationships with food when they take out certain foods. And I want to reiterate that also. There are people who have better relationships with food by cutting out certain foods. This is not commonly seen on social media at all. So here's the tricky part. If someone goes to a kind of conventional eating disorder facility and their trigger is that when they eat processed foods, it causes them to, it kind of pushes that button for them to want to keep eating more processed foods and leads them into a binge and triggers them into a binge, they're not going to get better necessarily, or at least 100% better from conventional methods, which are to liberalize all food restrictions. So when we eat foods that are highly processed, they kind of force our hand a bit to make us binge. So just eating all of those foods also can lead to and trigger binge eating.
I do want to go back for a second, because I think we have to acknowledge the fact that, let's say, you know, we are restricting either certain food groups or, you know, eating in a way that's not kind of like a, you know, we don't really have a routine around food. In that sense, then that first model where it comes to, you know, reducing that restriction, there are certain components of it that we still pull into the other two types. So what I mean by that is having, you know, protein, fat, and carb in each meal, really kind of having something every 3 to 5 hours, making sure that, you know, that's also supporting our nervous system. So it's feeding into the other two types, where it's supporting our nervous system and our cortisol levels, but it's also supporting our, you know, physical restriction, our body's physically getting the nutrients that it needs. And then it, that is kind of that foundation that opens us up to all three of those approaches going forward. But intentionally incorporating a high amount of hyperpalatable foods into that structured system is really not, it might be improving the psychological restriction of food, but it's really not giving our body the nutrients that it needs and kind of supporting our system in, you know, reducing our binge tendencies over time. It's not very sustainable long-term.
Do you find that in eating disorder clinics that they use hyperpalatable foods?
So again, on top of that very structured approach, like we're going to include protein, fat, and carb, 3 meals,
because
2 snacks.
Also, it's not just the psychological approach within eating disorder clinics. There's a lot of, I mean, these practitioners are incredible and life-saving practitioners, mm-hmm. and I can't say more positive things about them. What this episode's really talking about is the people who are not getting mm-hmm. the care that they need, or they aren't going to eating disorder clinics and they want to start their care for themselves at home in some way with, you know, of course, always go to a doctor if you feel, you know, any kind of fear or urgency around food that's unsettling or scary for you. But what we're talking about is the people who kind of get lost mm-hmm. in the weeds when it comes to these facilities. I think binge eating is a particular issue because, again, the model of treating eating disorders through reintroducing nutrients may be a little bit different in a binge eating person than one with diagnosed with anorexia mm-hmm. and someone who is binge eating versus someone who has a diagnosis of anorexia. So
part of the amazing work that that eating disorder practitioners do is they have to just, if someone has a restrictive eating disorder, they have to get nutrients back into the body. And I hear you speaking on that really beautifully too. They have to do that first, and it's really important.
But they are bringing in. So let's say someone has, you know, a binge food that they typically are, that's like when they're having a binge, this is the food that they're turning to. The approach in that setting would be to incorporate that food intentionally into a meal or a snack on a very routine basis so that it becomes normalized and it feels like, okay, this isn't so scary anymore. Again, for some people, that's just what they need. And then in like a week or two, they feel like, oh, this food doesn't have any power over me. I'm good. But there are, you know, a good portion of people who that time passes and they're like, I actually want to binge more. Like, I feel like this is not helpful for me. Like, I feel like the more I actually am turning to these foods and, or like, you know, incorporating a very, you know, high fat, lab made kind of processed meal, that actually leaves me feeling really, really crappy. And a lot of those people actually have more of an urge to binge post eating that food because of how bad they feel physically. And then again, going back to the nervous system, when we feel really, when we don't feel good, we want to feel better. That's just 100%. A natural response.
Yeah.
And how do we feel better? A lot of times we binge.
Yeah.
So absolutely. Some people are so confused. Like in my treatment, I had a McDonald's burger and that was supposed to help me. And then I actually went home and I binged afterward.
Mm. Yeah. I think there's so much being missed in the treatment of binge eating disorders that I see, even from an Instagram standpoint. Mm-hmm. Let's take it outside of these facilities. But binge eating will come from generally some sense of unsafety. Now, that unsafety could be restriction. It could be, oh my gosh, I'm not safe because I've been restricted for so long. That unsafety can come from feeling physically uncomfortable in your body. It could be from like stomach pain. You could say, and we'll talk about kind of what that experience is like before a binge, but it really can come from any sort of physical or mental change that doesn't feel good, like we said, and then you want to fix that, and binging will help to fix that. Where a lot of people get stuck, I think, with binge eating is they think that it's always only coming from restriction. Binge eating comes from any time we don't feel safe within our bodies. And in the case of eating really highly processed foods repeatedly, it's weird because that can create such a physical discomfort, and it's a really low grade physical discomfort that we're not realizing that then causes and pushes us to want to binge more. It also creates an urgency and a wanting and desire for those foods that is quite literally the biggest goal of food companies, is to get you eating more of it. And then foods that are not hyper palatable, like meat and fruits and vegetables and grains and many grains and all these foods, they don't have the same kind of impact that's going to push someone from a physical or mental standpoint to push them into that binge zone. I mean, it's much harder to binge eat carrots than it is to binge eat Oreos, obviously. It doesn't have the same dopamine effect. It does not give you that boost. So I think every treatment to binge eating disorder is missing something. And I think that when you look at it from a really comprehensive lens of why am I feeling unsafe and what's driving me to do this personally, and you explore not only mental triggers, but physical triggers too, that's where you can actually start that binge eating transformation. So what we want to do in this episode is establish, again, all three models, which have extreme validity and have helped people so much. And then why do we binge eat in the first place and explore that sensation? So Nikki, I kind of want to jump into a bit of a case study. I want to make one more point before, actually, and then we're going to kind of jump into what the feeling and experience of wanting to binge is like, what we feel like during a binge and after. And I hope that viewers can say, that kind of feels relatable to me. And it's certainly the experience that we've had in our lives, the experience we've had with clients before. So here's what's really happening on social media that's concerning me too, is that there's people who are experiencing binge eating episodes, and they're experiencing it because they're eating those hyper palatable foods. So what they're doing is going online and looking and seeing, oh, I have to stop restriction of these foods. And their binge eating is getting, episodes are getting worse, more severe, and more frequent. And they feel bad about themselves because they're saying,
this isn't working for me. I must be doing something wrong. So I really just want anyone listening to this to know if they've used food as an emotional regulation mechanism, if they have episodes of binge eating they're uncomfortable with, it's very likely they haven't tried every model and probably the model they're trying isn't working for them. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. And that's why I want to have this episode. So Nikki, walk us through, and we're going to both talk through this together, the mindset of someone, an example of someone, because everyone has different triggers, of what it feels like before a binge. Mm-hmm.
So I would say, and again, each type of binge feels a little bit different. And this is also something you can explore within yourself, kind of walking through, oh, what does it feel like if I really didn't eat that much all day and then I have a binge, I'm going into a binge, or I feel like I want to binge. What does that feel like versus when I feel like I actually ate, you know, my adequate nutrients throughout the day and now my boss yelled at me at work and I came home and I was really, really stressed out and that was leading me to a binge. So okay, you might notice that your binges feel different depending on what the trigger is.
Let's pick one.
Okay. So I like using the emotional one because I feel like more people have that experience.
Emotionally driven binging, yes, is more common than physically driven binging.
I would say, and you tell me too in your experience, but I would say with my clients, that's what I see.
Binging feels like something that takes the edge off of the day. It feels very regulating for people temporarily, and then it feels very dysregulating, as we know. Let's go with an emotional aspect of what it would feel like prior to a binge.
So I would say, let's say you are really, really overwhelmed with work and you come home and you feel like there's almost this ball of anxiety or energy, mm-hmm, that's kind of like making its way. It's like in your chest. And I wouldn't call it like something like a reflux, but it's like this feeling of this energy that you actually feel like sometimes maybe you could like jump up and down or go run.
A zinginess.
Like a zinginess. Yeah. Like it's this energy that needs to come out, but it's like pinging and vibrating throughout your body. And it starts to kind of make its way into your head. And some people get like dizzy. Like it's some people get really kind of activated in this period. And I would say that because you're now entering such a state of fight or flight, a lot of people notice that it's almost like if you were to be in an actual physical threat, like your amazing example that you always use when we're running from the bear. So it almost is like you lose your peripheral vision. Like you start to get tunnel vision physically and mentally. And then you really just, especially if you've binged before, you start to then fixate on what am I going to do to stop this feeling? I'm so uncomfortable. And that's when you might start to notice, I have those cookies in the cabinet. Oh, I made that thing. I have those leftovers in the fridge. Oh, what can I order? Let me go order something. Or some people notice then they just open up ordering apps and they're like on Uber Eats kind of flipping through. And some people also notice that as they start to then plan what they're going to binge, it almost, that act starts to calm them a little bit.
A little bit of relief.
Yeah.
Knowing that the discomfort's going to be over soon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I don't have to ride this out much longer because my fix is coming soon.
Sure.
And it almost feels like, some people then notice it almost is like an out-of-body experience toward the end of that feeling, like right before going into a binge. And there also might be a little bit of these thoughts that come in that's like the screw it mentality. It's like, yes, I'll just do this and I'll just worry about it tomorrow.
So I'll speak on that too. So you've laid the groundwork that a pre-binge is actually a very physical reaction for people oftentimes. And we don't notice it, mm-hmm, that much. So what Nikki's kind of explaining, and I've experienced with, you know, through a client lens and the way that they've explained it to me, is it's almost like you don't have weight in your, like you feel flighty almost, and like food will like ground you kind of. So it feels like you're zingy, flighty. And like one client described it as like, she didn't have blood flowing in her hands or something like that. Like she just needed something that would pull her down kind of. And you feel very up high, you know, which is an interesting sensation. And it can feel like an empty, hollow, uncomfortable feeling. And at the same time, your brain is trying to protect you at all costs, right? So the problem with binge eating is that your brain logically knows that there's a fallout in ways of physiological consequence if you binge eat. So what I really encourage clients to do is also before the binge happens, understand that there's different voices at play. So we often think it's just one voice and it's like, you have to binge and you must do this for me. But really what ends up happening is another voice comes out and says, well, if you binge, you're going to gain weight and then you're really going to be upset and summer's coming. And blah, blah, blah. Then that happens. You can't binge again. I can't even believe you're considering binging again. And then the voice comes back out and says, but we're going to feel better if we binge. And another voice comes out and says, stop, screw it. I don't want to hear this conversation anymore. By the time the screw it voice comes, there's probably already been 5 other conversations that we missed. There's probably already been 10 warning signs in our body. That's what really the goal in treatment of binge eating and working with binge eating is try to pick up on things before they're at the last second. Sometimes you're not going to be able to prevent a binge, and you can still use it as an opportunity to just see and sit with what you're experiencing during. There's so much opportunity in learning about binging, sitting with the discomfort of it, and then still doing it. We're not telling anyone to stop binging, even if that's ultimately the goal, because there's so much to learn in this experience. Mm-hmm. So Nikki, we're in this experience where we hear the voices in our head. They're going back and forth. They're competing with each other. We don't even realize it yet, maybe, but we do notice some physical discomfort. We might not even pick up on the physical discomfort, by the way.
Right.
But we're starting to. Tell me, we start to notice a little bit of relief when we order a food, maybe, or we even have the apps open. Mm-hmm. We have cookies. Tell me, someone is going to binge in our example. What's the next step? What's the next sensation?
So there's, let's say, you know, now you have this food in front of you and you're kind of about to start binging. Sometimes, and again, going back to the voices, sometimes there's this voice that's like, well, we'll just have a bite of this, or right. I'll just have one of these. And so I would say that the relief actually doesn't come until we have the whole screw it. Like after that screw it is when it almost is enjoyable.
Yeah.
Like it's
of course it's enjoyable.
Yeah. It's this very, it's like a weight's been lifted, like this relief of like, oh, okay, that weight that you've been holding from the day or from whatever kind of triggered you into this moment, you're releasing that entirely. Mm-hmm. And so if you're someone especially who has trouble kind of with emotional release or with kind of processing your emotions, it becomes this almost like a ritual. Like it becomes this process of really releasing all of this weight and then feeling like, you know, you're kind of coming back into your body almost in a way that, but you might also just be watching yourself doing it. So yeah. Some people notice.
It feels so out of control that they don't feel like they're in their bodies at all.
Exactly. And so you're eating, but you're not actually even tasting a lot of the time. So you're going through the act of eating, but it's very emotionally satisfying, but not in the same way that, let's say, you know, you went to a bakery and sat down and had like a nice croissant or something. Like it's not that type of satisfying.
It's like press a dopamine button satisfying.
Yeah.
Like that kind of very reward system response. And there are floods of chemicals going on in your mm-hmm. body during this. Can you speak on that a little bit too?
It's like a hit, actually. So we know that the act of eating itself is calming. It brings our blood flow back to our gut. It's, you know, putting us into rest and digest. There actually was, I worked with a girl who had, she actually did binge on carrots, which was your exact example before.
I definitely could binge on carrots, by the way. I get it, but it's a different experience, but I hear what you're
saying. But it was interesting because we know that the act of eating calms the body. So even though it's not nearly as calming or satisfying as binging on a more hyperpalatable food, that act of actually chewing is very grounding to us. So that we're releasing, now we're also binging on things that are a little bit more carbohydrate heavy. We're really binging on something that might have a little bit more sugar content in
sugar, it. Sugar, salt, fat, carb combination and, mm-hmm. and perfect little combinations that really light our brains up.
Yeah. So we're getting a lot of those happy neurotransmitters. So we're getting serotonin, dopamine. It's really starting to now, we were in that fight or flight and very activated. And now it's really kind of making us feel a little bit calmer. It's physically calming us down and emotionally calming us down. And so when we're in that process, we want to continue because, oh my gosh, this is a 180 from where I felt before. I want to keep going. And so there's this period where it actually starts to keep, you know, continue feeling good. But what people might notice is if you're someone who binges on, you know, let's say you're not really just binging on one food, you're hopping from one food to the next. We know that when we start to eat a certain food, it activates our reward system more than when we continue eating that same food.
You have kind of a drop off response. Yes. When you eat the same food, as you continue to eat it, it's not giving you the same punch.
Right. So you might notice that you're having, you know, you're spending 5 minutes on this food and then you're hopping to the next food because it's bringing you back up in terms of your reward system.
You got a new hit.
But it's not nearly the same as that first hit was.
Yeah.
No. So it's kind of like this diminishing return that keeps happening. And so then you start to get, then we start to hit this point where it starts to become a little bit, it's not as physically satisfying as it first was because now we're getting physical discomfort.
And that'll happen, would you say, usually 10 minutes into a binge, 2 hours after a binge? When do you notice people start to ground in and feel that physical discomfort?
So this also depends on what people are binging on, I find. I find that people who have more of like an orthorexic tendency, like they're really afraid to eat even like
they're
a cookie.
They're eating like paleo cookies or something like that.
Or people are eating like a yogurt bowl or like a protein bread or like a, you know, something that's really fibrous and really high protein.
Yeah.
That physical discomfort actually hits before the emotional satisfaction hits. And so
that's interesting.
It's almost like the binge is less satisfying to them.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You almost need more of the healthy, not as hitty foods to get that really good feeling versus if you were just having like a straight up Dunkin' Donuts donut or something like that, where you're going to get an immediate response.
Right.
You don't get the same immediate response. So you actually might need more of those foods. And those foods are very dense for digestion, which also many people who have recurrent binge eating episodes do consider like food density for binging as well, I'm sure.
And so I would say that, you know, for some, it really honestly depends. I would say it also depends on how much someone ate that day. But for some people, it's 5 minutes. For some people, it's like 30, 40 minutes. Some people also take a break and then say that, you know, okay, I'm physically uncomfortable. I'm done with this for tonight. And then actually notice that they come back and have kind of like a second binge in the same night.
And what do you think that's all about?
Personally, I think that that is related to that psychological piece of oh my God, that was the last time that this was ever going to happen. Mm. I'm starting over fresh. And we don't ever want to cut something enjoyable out of our lives. Like, you know, it's actually something, it becomes like a routine that a lot of people look forward to at the end of their day.
Absolutely.
And so to say, I'm going to now never do that again, that also creates a threat response in the body that makes us want to binge to feel better again.
The really tricky part about treating binge eating is that during a binge, we have two very strong preservation responses competing against each other at the same time. One response is to keep us healthy and one response is to keep us happy, essentially. And they're both going head to head at the same time, which ultimately leads to tremendous shame around binge eating. And I just want to say, and we should have said this at the top of the episode, if you have any shame around binge eating, the goal of this episode is to reduce your shame around binge eating, if not completely eliminate it, because we're giving an understanding of exactly why this happens. Mm-hmm. Binge eating is very sensible to me. It makes total sense to me. And it's a practical solution to a very challenging problem that we have, which is feeling like crap. Mm-hmm. It actually helps us feel better. So if you are a person who experiences that shame around binge eating, because I know it's counter to your health goals, it's counter to our emotional goals and our physical goals. But if someone's listening to this and feels that shame around binge eating, I can't take the shame away with a snap. But I hope some of the conversation we're having is internalizing to understand you are doing this for a reason. And when we can find out the reason and work with the reason, that's when the binge can transform. But the shame around binge eating, I feel, is the biggest driver of binge eating outside of all of this. Yeah. Is post-binge, Nikki, take us to that moment. Post-binge, what's the conversation like in our heads? What do we feel like after a binge?
Mm-hmm.
One important aspect of health that comes up in almost every Quiet the Diet podcast episodes is the relationship between our gut and our brain. We refer to this oftentimes as our gut-brain axis. And for a long time, we've understood that IBS symptoms are related to the stress that we experience. I'm so excited to talk to you today about today's podcast sponsor, Nerva. As you all know, I'm on a mission to share any whole body strategy to help manage and, when possible, reverse chronic symptoms that I've seen work in my client population. Both my clients and also our amazing lead dietitian, Nikki, have experienced tremendous benefits from Nerva. Nerva is a gut-directed hypnotherapy app, which means that while you're at home, you can listen to hypnotherapies that are specifically designed to help manage IBS symptoms. This mobile app has helped over 100,000 IBS patients address the miscommunication between the gut and the brain. Gut-directed hypnotherapy has been proven to work just as well as a low FODMAP diet in managing IBS. Our goal with our clients is always to reduce the need for long-term elimination diets and provide any strategy that might be supportive that's low risk and high efficacy. And that's just what Nerva is. So with their 6-week program of listening to gut-directed hypnotherapies from an app right from your home, they've seen incredible success in reducing IBS symptoms. Instead of targeting stress from a meditation perspective that's more open-ended and not as targeted, Nerva has carefully curated and crafted these research-driven hypnotherapies to specifically target IBS-related, nervous system-related symptoms. As a Quiet the Diet listener, you are eligible to have a 7-day free trial of Nerva, which you can see down in the link below. I couldn't recommend Nerva more for our listeners and our clients. It has been so effective in helping to manage IBS symptoms. And for our clients to have something that is able to be done from the comfort and safety of their homes is really a game changer. So for that reason, we are extra excited to have Nerva as our sponsor this season.
So sometimes there's this, and it might happen right away. It might actually happen after about 5-10 minutes. There's this like this euphoria. It's almost like it kind of feels like a drug. Like I'm in this euphoric state, and you know, you maybe usually it's really hard to kind of have a conversation with someone. You feel like you kind of just want to lay and be for a second, and you're kind of like riding this high, really, that's coming from all of these chemicals and neurotransmitters in your brain. And then that starts to really kind of dissipate, and you start to be left with this, the physical feeling of fullness, the fear of waking, if that's something that scares you. And this sometimes shame around, what did I just do?
Why did I do that?
I did that again. I said I would never do that again.
And it makes people feel a lot of self-betrayal.
Yeah.
I notice, and they're like, I thought I was a person who could be above this or something. I just want to say something. No one is above our biology. So we can't fight our biology. And if we do not, the only thing we can do is pretty much ride out discomfort, explore discomfort, and then it transforms. But if we are constantly uncomfortable, you would have to be silly to not binge eat, right? You'd have to be silly to not do these things. It makes sense. It makes us feel better. Binge eating is a supportive tool for making us feel better.
By the way, it's really interesting you say that too, because it just reminded me that when you're treating binge eating, especially in someone that has, that's really kind of binging because of some type of trauma or deep-seated, really intense emotional pain, you actually are not even supposed to treat the binging until they have some type of trauma therapist or some type of strategy to manage what comes up when the binging is gone. Because the discomfort is so great and painful that it actually becomes a concern.
It's almost dangerous to remove a tool that's so supportive and helpful.
Exactly.
Yeah, I see this in like addiction transference too, where when you go to 12-step meetings, everyone's smoking cigarettes and eating cake together. Not to say, but the point being that because there's chemical alterations that happen in your brain during binge eating, it to go cold turkey on it even is not something that generally is going to be sustainable in the long term. So people saying to themselves, I've never binging again and I'm not going to do it. That actually can, again, cause that preservation response to kick in and be a trigger for binging in the future. So the language we want people to use around binging is more, wow, I really didn't like that. I noticed how I felt during that. Let me retrace my steps a little bit and see where I can kind of support myself throughout. But the language is not, you're the worst person in the world because you binge ate. Not only because, ouch, and that's really hurtful to say to oneself and all of our baseline, but also because it's extremely and incredibly unhelpful for treating binge eating. Self-cruelty is very unsupportive for binge eating recovery.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed that when we start to tell clients or talk with people about how this is actually, it makes complete sense. This is actually your body's way of kind of protecting itself. It does lift a lot of that guilt and shame. And sometimes just that knowledge and alone is enough to kind of calm some of the binge urges a little bit, especially the ones that are driven out of shame and, you know, poor, self-image. And one of the, you know, strategies when it comes to the way that we talk to ourselves and, you know, one of the strategies that can help us also reduce our tendency to binge is also increasing our self-confidence. And a lot of people say that they're like, I'm really confused. Like I'm binging because I am really unhappy with the way I look or feel about myself. How could I possibly, I can't be confident until I reach that point. But what we notice is what this is true when it comes to sustainable weight loss, when it comes to sustainable reduction in binge behaviors. If we actually start with the positive self-image and the, it could be affirmations or mantras, whatever you want to call it, when we start to talk nicer to ourselves and, you know, really lift ourselves up in the way that you would a friend who was really depressed and going through a hard time, that can actually lift you out of a lot of these behaviors because you start to feel the confidence in your ability to sit with discomfort and to kind of ride out that feeling as well.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk about sitting with the discomfort piece. I was struck to share while we've been talking about my childhood experience. And if you've listened to the podcast before, I grew up in a larger body as a child. And part of my uncomfortable relationship with food came from the fact that because I was in a larger body, I didn't feel comfortable eating in front of other people. Mm. And that's a huge driver for binging for people because they're finally home, finally relaxed. They're finally not being seen. And being seen can be really uncomfortable when it comes to eating. And I used to have this image, and this just struck me when we were talking, of myself as this little kid who would binge. And I felt like I was very sneaky about it. And now I just think about, thank goodness my little smart self save my own life because I was starving. So thank goodness, like my little brain saved my own life. And that's the kind of language I want people to start using is thank you to binge eating. Thank you to myself for protecting me. And thank you for saving my life when I needed it. Food may have been the only friend that some people had during some moments in their life. If people have stressful days that are 15 hours long and they come home and they can finally unwind, let's be appreciative towards binge eating. As we're saying that, if we even think of the word binge eating, we can almost picture it differently. It feels different than if we say, you have to stop binge eating, then thank you, binge eating. And that's the kind of transformation we're looking for, is to create a positive relationship with binge eating instead of trying to cut it out, eliminate it. It just really doesn't work when you do that.
And so going back to something you said earlier that, you know, in the way that we're reframing this, we're approaching it with curiosity, as we are any other behavior that we have or that our thought that our body has or our brain has. We're really looking at, why am I thinking this way? Why am I doing these things? And so if we remove the shame, approach it with curiosity, what a lot of people start to notice is maybe you still are binging and you actually probably are, because it's not something that really stops right away. But let's say now you come home from work and you start a binge, and now maybe right around this halfway mark where the shame used to come in that might have driven you toward a continuation of the binge another 10 minutes. Instead of that shame voice coming in, now this voice is coming in like, ooh, something really intense must have happened today for this to be going on. And it's that curiosity, having that curiosity over the course of the past day or week is now showing you, oh, something's going on that I think I have to explore. And so that might actually prompt you to take a step back in the middle of your binge and notice, I actually feel a lot better than I felt when I came home. Can I maybe just sit for a second and calm down? Because I know that I'm now feeling a little bit better. I might not need that extra 10 minutes of my binge because, you know, I'm realizing that that maybe was that first 10 minutes was what I needed to really get into this calmer state. And now I can sit and maybe try to explore kind of, you know, what drove me toward this point.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think if we instantly change the language around binging to binging being something that's protective and potentially positive, it already is going to get into the subconscious of people during the week. And Nikki, when we're working with clients on binge eating, which is something we work on all the time, it's like it comes up in most of our client conversations. Really, our goal and the biggest tool we have, and we're just going to kind of not gatekeep this, is really just having people feel comfortable with their own actions and understand themselves better. I think that's the most important transformation piece is, oh, I get why I'm doing that. I'm not a horrible person. I'm not a shameful person for doing this. It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I know it makes sense, I need to understand why I'm doing it myself and personally. And then the understanding of binge eating is what transforms it.
Mm-hmm.
The understanding of oneself and building confidence in oneself transforms it. So the kind of conventional treatment to binge eating, again, is not only to liberalize all food restrictions. Of course, it covers a psychological aspect of binge eating too, but then it also covers making sure that you're eating regularly enough and eating enough protein and eating enough of a balance of macronutrients that your body's not hungry in a non-obvious way that then drives you to binge. So that's just right off the bat. If we have tips for people, it's if you are binge eating, I would say something like intermittent fasting, interestingly, can actually trigger or help binge eating. It's interesting. Sometimes when it comes to binge eating, black and white rules are very helpful. And Sometimes black and white rules are very triggering. And there's two different prototypes. I will tell you for myself, I do very well with black and white rules. So if I, in my own health healing journey, I have to be like, Michelle, you have to walk at 7 a.m. every day. It's just a non, and Nikki, by the way, we have the same conversation. Right. We ask each other if the other one walked. You have to walk at 7 a.m. You have to eat breakfast. Once my brain starts going, would it be interesting if I went on a very low carb diet? Like, nope, we don't do that. You know, you have to kind of learn what your things are in this process of healing and this process of transforming your binge eating. And I'm going to use the word transforming binge eating the whole time we're talking as opposed to ending binge eating.
Mm-hmm.
In the process of transforming binge eating, though, it's really about knowing yourself and what you need. So if I didn't eat for an entire day, I promise you I would be binging. So it's not, and the another piece of this that's important is that the impulse to binge comes from either a voice, a sensation in the body. The goal of any binge eating transformation is so that ultimately over time, the trigger to binge is lower.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't feel as much urgency around it. So I would say I haven't had any urgency to binge in several years. Mm-hmm. It's not what I go towards. That no longer becomes the impulse. So when you are very sensitized to it and repeatedly doing binge eating, the thoughts around it, the urgency to do it may be higher. So also noticing that the goal and the journey is A, to have lower urgency and input of need for it, and B, knowing how to respond when that urgency or input comes up. So let's be really honest about an experience someone would have, Nikki. So let's say they're in that state. What would we recommend for someone who's in that moment, in that state, even though this is not medical or nutrition advice, if they're in that moment or in this state of, I am about to binge and I feel so ill right now, I feel bloated, I feel stomach discomfort, I feel light and flighty and zingy, what am I doing in this exact moment?
Mm-hmm. So in that moment, and this also brings us back to some of Stephanie Mara Fox's amazing work with...
Season one, episode three, we had Stephanie Mara Fox, who is a somatic eating practitioner. And Stephanie says this brilliant statement, somatic eating is the step before intuitive eating. And what Stephanie means by that is that we jump into intuitive eating as being, oh, I want to try intuitive eating to help support. But if we don't feel what's going on inside of our bodies, we actually can't eat intuitively. So you need to eat and experience food somatically. Mm-hmm. So now go back to what you're saying.
Yeah. So she introduced this concept of, introducing a pause between the trigger and the response. So the trigger being how you feel, and this confuses people all the time, but it can be, I feel bloated, I actually want to binge. Or it can be, I am extremely overwhelmed or stressed or sad or lonely. And so that would be, let's say, your trigger. And the response would be reaching for food. So we're not taking away the response. We're not saying, I can't binge today. We're saying, I actually can binge, but let me just pause for a second and just sit with this feeling and practice exploring what this discomfort feels like for even 2 seconds.
2 seconds. We're not talking about 2 minutes. We're talking about 2 seconds. Okay, I don't feel good. Where do I feel it? Where do I feel it? Okay, I noticed that. I acknowledge that. Okay, go on.
And that is key, naming it. So also that feeling of even just saying out loud, even if you can't identify, I feel overwhelmed or stressed, just saying, wow, I'm having an urge to binge. I feel activated. Mm-hmm. I feel a ball of anxiety in my chest. Just voicing that and naming it can also really just calm our system because our body is like, oh, she hears me. She gets it.
Totally. And you mentioned naming it. I'll take it one step further to say coloring it, which means, and we talked about this in season one, episode 3 as well. But if I feel a weirdness in my chest, close your eyes and picture what color that is. So it's like there's a weird yellow in my chest. And you can even ask yourself, how do I make that not yellow? And you're like, binge eating will make it not yellow. Mm-hmm. Or maybe there's a friend you could call who makes you feel heart-centered. Maybe there's an activity you can do. Maybe you can just walk outside and take a second. It's not even putting off the binge. It's responding to the exact thing that's going on in your body. What I can almost promise someone is that if they're present during a binge in whatever way they can be, it will transform the binge. Mm-hmm. It will transform the binge. So any way you can bring presence and somatic experience of being in your body, which means like just noticing you have a body at all, that is going to be so transformative. It seems like these are not hacks. It seems like these are annoying recommendations from us. Right. It's like, just tell me how to stop binging. I don't want to hear this. But in reality, long term, this is actually the model that, you know, we're really not gatekeeping anything. This is actually the model we would be using with clients mm-hmm. and do use with clients all the time. It's so much more about regulating ourselves and so much more about understanding how we feel and responding to how we feel. Because remember, binge eating builds in the moment a real sense of trust within self because you're saying, I need something, and your body is speaking to you and you're responding and saying, I got you. Mm-hmm. We have to think of how else can we say, I got you to our bodies? How else can we support our bodies in a way that's supportive in the short term and in the long term? Mm-hmm.
And this also might come back to why you have that urge in the first place. Like I know in my binge eating journey, I would find myself in the kitchen, but it was almost always standing up at the counter. Like it was never sitting down. Sure. And so I would just kind of turn around with my back to the counter and just sit on the floor. Something about sitting on the floor, and again, grounding. This might not be for everyone, but it's very grounding. Even laying down on the floor, you can have your legs up the wall. But even also just giving, if you feel like the urge to binge is more emotional, you might even give yourself, hearing myself say this, I know that years ago I would have been like, this girl needs to stop talking. Like I would literally like just do this, like wrap your arms around yourself. Absolutely. Or even like hold your own hand, like put mm-hmm. your hands together. And you're basically, I would like kind of like put my hands together and picture like one of my hands is the part of me that's like needing comfort. And then that other hand is this other piece of me that's like, we're gonna get through this. It's gonna be okay. Mm-hmm. And especially if you live alone or you don't have someone with you in that moment. And a lot of times you don't really want someone with you in that moment either. Mm. 'Cause it's a very, intentionally lonely experience that you don't want it. It's someone
isolated. You are intentionally isolating yourself to fix something.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if it's born, you know, from an emotional or emotionally driven, just even kind of giving yourself that comfort in a hug or a handhold or something and just telling yourself, okay, I'm here with you and we can totally binge. That's definitely an option that we have, but we might just try sitting here for a few more seconds. And you might notice that as time goes on, that urge starts to go down a little bit. And let's say you do decide, hey, I actually still really need to binge right now. Maybe that binge is shorter. Maybe
Or maybe it's exactly the same, but you experience it differently.
Exactly.
And you don't have as much shame after or something like that. So I had this is something that this is a reference I've used in other conversations, but I'm going to bring it into this because it may be emotional when you said, I got you with the hand. So there's a scene in Harry Potter. What a surprise. I'm talking about Harry Potter on the podcast. Where in the third movie, and book, but the movie visual is very important. Harry is at this lake. It's the third movie it's definitely the third movie. And I'm so embarrassed. He's with Hermione and he's watching himself basically die. And he thinks that because they're using time travel, he thinks that his father who's passed away is going to come and save him. Nikki's like, you lost me on Harry Potter.
No. I'm like, I know exactly the scene that you're talking about. And I'm like, it is a perfect.
And I'm going to start crying when I think about it. It's so good. So basically Harry's waiting for his dad to come. And he's like waiting for his father to come. And he says, no, I know he's coming. I saw him come. And then Hermione says, Harry, nobody's coming. And then Harry actually sends his own Patronus out to save his own life. And I feel very much with binge eating. If you can feel like the Harry in that moment and just know that you can always like be there for yourself. And I don't know if I want to use this term, but save yourself. I just found that so powerful when it comes to any aspect of our health is that really no one is coming. I mean, of course we're here to help people and to support people, but feeling like you are the tough one and you're the one who's able to save the day is so important. So that top hand that you said that says, I got you, that's holding on. We kind of have to get our inner savers out and our inner strength in these moments too. And inner strength doesn't mean ignoring ourselves. Mm-hmm. It means being really compassionate and just having one side of you that's holding the other side of you. And I think that's so powerful. Like just, I want anyone listening to understand that there is a part of you that is strong beyond measure and is infinitely strong and absolutely can hold the part of you that's not feeling as strong in the moment. So I love the just using your hands or using your arms, like picture you're like big and strong and you're, you know, wrapping your arms around yourself and just knowing that like you're going to be the one who's going to save you. And it's not saving you from binge eating. It's saving you from not knowing yourself, saving you from that discomfort, but you are going to be that person. You're going to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's why when we talk about strategies to reduce binge eating, a lot of the strategies that we talk about are actually not in the immediate before, during, and after the binge, which is interesting because I hear a lot from my clients saying, oh, my therapist told me to journal when I get the urge to binge. Okay. A lot of times, and that can be helpful if that's something that's doable for you. What I find is a lot of people that moment is so intense and you actually just so don't feel like yourself in that moment that it might not be the time to be exploring your triggers. And so sometimes taking a step back and exploring those triggers when you actually feel very safe and calm.
You feel like yourself.
Exactly.
You feel authentically attached to yourself. Remember that binging feels a lot like betrayal. Binging feels a lot like a divergence from self. So anything that calls you to kind of be yourself when you're already feeling not yourself is not going to feel right and it's not going to feel good. Mm-hmm. I totally get that too. Sometimes when we're anxious or sometimes when we don't feel well, we need to ride that as opposed to trying to change it. Mm-hmm. And that's what's really important in binge eating. None of what we said is saying, stop doing the thing. That's not the point of binge eating. Transformation. The point of binge eating transformation is to experience it. And the act of experiencing binge eating is what transforms binge eating. So you have to be in it with yourself. Because at the time that it happens, we feel very disconnected intentionally from our physical and mental selves because we don't want to be there. It's not feeling good to be there.
Yeah. And so some people might notice either, like you said, riding out that feeling in that moment. So maybe that pause between the trigger and responding in the form of a binge or responding in the form of a different self-soothing strategy. Maybe that pause was first 10 seconds or 2 seconds. And now it's, you know, maybe it's 20 seconds. Maybe it's a minute or two. Maybe sure. you got to the point where you can kind of lay there for 5 minutes and kind of soothe yourself. And like you also said before, maybe it's the same exact amount of time. Maybe you've only ever been able to sit there for 10 seconds, but the way that you sit with yourself is different. And the trust that you have in yourself is different over time. And that's still progress. That's still, you know, part of that transformation. You might find that if you feel, you know, maybe thinking through, when do I feel most like myself? It could be coming back from, you know, spending time with friends. It could be the first moment you wake up in the morning. And maybe that's the moment to journal and explore, how do I feel in my body?
It's when you feel the most like yourself and the toughest.
Yeah.
It's when you feel like I am not a tumbleweed in the desert that anything can push me over and I'm going to blow away in the wind, but I'm a tree in the forest that's been there thousands of years and nothing can touch me because I'm so grounded and strong. We all have at least one moment during the day, maybe during the month, where we feel like that. And what you're saying, and I'm hearing you beautifully say too, Nikki, is that if we can access that person, that's the person you want to hear from. That's the person you want to learn from. And that's the person you want to know is on your team mm-hmm. when you need them the most. So that's when we journal. Mm-hmm. As opposed to journaling and becoming so aware of how uncomfortable we are and so aware of how weak we feel. I don't know if the word's weak, but like out of control mm-hmm. we feel. And some people do feel weak in those moments. We journal in the moments where we feel the most badass and the strongest to remind ourselves like, oh yeah, I'm that cool person. And you're always that cool person mm-hmm. all the time.
And it can, let's say,
binging's uncool. Binging's cool.
Yeah. It can be, and the way that we've been talking about this is as if it's you bringing yourself through it, which it 100% you can do this and you might be the person that you rely on. But I have also heard from clients that they have an amazing partner that they actually have trouble talking themselves, you know, through some of these things. And by sitting with their partner and kind of being yeah. open with them, and it almost makes them feel like it's less of a secret that they're harboring. And it kind of is this feeling of relief, like, oh, it's out in the open. This big secret is, you know, revealed. Again, if you don't feel safe with someone else, that's totally fine. You don't have to be, you know, bringing someone else into this.
Yeah.
But if there is someone that you trust and that typically when you feel really down makes you feel, brings you into that strength and brings you, you know, kind of they're like supplementing the strength to you that you then take on. If there's someone in your life that typically is able to do that for you, then it could be worth exploring to also bring them into that journey.
Absolutely.
Too.
And I think the way that that would be done is something along the lines of, hey, this is happening. I don't like it. We know what to do. And I think having a partner be very non-reactionary and just witnessing you mm-hmm. is more important than someone saying, I'm going to close the cabinets for you or something right. that feels even more restrictive and threatening. I think the way that someone helps you through it is they will try to support the somatic part of it with you and be like, oh, what are you feeling? So you can ask them to ask questions. What could we do that would be supportive for you? How can I help you during this time? Or I really like if it was something, again, where maybe I had a physical symptom, if I went to my husband and was like, hey, Jeremy, I feel weird. And he was like, oh my God, how can I help you? I'd be like, that really, really annoyed me. Honestly, I would be like, I just want him to be like, okay, I'll be in the other room mm-hmm. if you need me. Just know I'm here. Just knowing someone's there and destigmatizing it and really talking about binge eating from a very non-shameful, destigmatized way. Like, yeah, I have this thing. And it's a part of the way that I regulate. If I come to you, here's what I expect from you and what would help me. I think that's the best way to do it because most people in our lives who are our family want to just help us by fixing things. And that's also not going to be supportive. So I think asking people for help and telling them how to help you
yeah.
is probably the best way. And I find non-reaction, non-judgment, just a feeling of strength and support being there is usually the most effective.
When we talk about journaling, I think that's a lot of, very scary for people sometimes yeah. that they're like, there's a blank page and I don't know what the hell to put on here. So it's also helpful. And I do this with clients sometimes that will have like, it would be, you know, like Michelle's handbook or I Michelle's like manual.
The rules of engagement.
Exactly. It would be like, these are the rules, my rules for how, you know, my manual on how to get through my life. And so part of that journal experience can be, okay, when I'm feeling this way, this is the type of support I need from someone else. Or I find that laying on the ground for 5 minutes is very helpful for me. Mm-hmm. Or just even like a list of strategies that you find helpful and soothing to you.
Sure.
And creating a different type of ritual, maybe coming home from work and taking an Epsom salt bath, or like having some type of, you know, something to turn to actually, because we know that there's a reason that you have been turning to binging. And so we still want to be addressing whatever that need is in the body. And again, I always like to call out anytime I say something like an Epsom salt bath or something, I know if you have like multiple kids and everyone's running around and you're like
yeah,
a bath,
20 minutes,
please. Yeah, right. Yeah, like a bath. I haven't taken a bath since I was 21. Like that's okay. It doesn't have to be something that, you know, extreme. Like
it also doesn't be that length of time.
Right.
It's really just run outside for a second, scream and come back inside if you have to. Like whatever everyone regulates differently. Like Nikki, we're New Yorkers. We come from very, even though your mom's the sweetest person ever, Kathy, she's listening. We come from very direct and bold personality households. If something felt uncomfortable for us, we wouldn't respond as well with like, everything's going to be okay.
Right.
We would be like, you're lying to me. That's not what we're... So you have to also think about how do you interact with yourself during these times? And that might be what you put in your manual, which is like, say this in this voice, like mm-hmm. this person, instead of saying to yourself, like right before a binge, everything is okay. It's fine if you binge. You don't think it's fine. Most people do not think it's fine if they're binging. They have a tremendous amount of shame around it. So it could just be like, you know, it's not right, but it's okay. It's not right, but it's okay. Mm-hmm. And think about how you're interacting with yourself around any sort of emotional eating episode.
Exactly. And even like you can put quotes in there too.
Sure.
And that can include quotes in the morning that say, I am strong. I am, you know, starting to list out things that you admire about yourself.
Also.
Yes. That build up that confidence. And it might be stuff you don't believe, which is completely
fine. You're
definitely
not gonna believe it.
Like
that's
it's
part
fine.
Of the game.
We're brainwashing ourselves and that's okay.
Exactly. We're gaslighting and brainwashing ourselves into being happy and well.
I love
this. This is a podcast. This is not to gaslight yourself.
Exactly.
Instead of having other people gaslight you, just gaslight yourself first. You know what I mean? And then gaslight them. Be like, I already gaslit myself. I'm good. Yeah, this is the gaslighting podcast. Also, gaslighting is a very funny word for us to say in our accents. Gaslighting. I also just, again, in I love this idea of this manual too. I hope that people make their list or their thing. And it's so weird that someone else reads it and says, I have literally no idea what this is. That's how weird that book should be. And I love this idea of a manual for people. So if we sum all of this up, first thing when it comes to binge eating that people really want to understand, and I want them to hear, is that binge eating is a tool for preservation. If you are binge eating, you are doing it for a reason and it is valid. It is an okay thing to do and it doesn't make you bad. It makes perfect sense why you're doing it. The next thing when it comes to binge eating is to think about there's three different models for the treatment of binge eating. One is that you have to liberalize all food restrictions. One is that you treat the nervous system and somatically experience through a binge. The other is that you have to take foods out of your diet that are potentially triggering. Again, models one and three are opposite of each other. You have to find out which model works best for you. If you've tried one model and it hasn't worked, jump to another model and try that. It's okay to jump around and try. The more important lesson from kind of this podcast episode is that binge eating is something to be experienced. And experiencing binge eating is the transformation. So any way you can experience it, whether you write a manual for yourselves of how to experience it, whether you lay on the ground and let the wave of discomfort flow through you and still binge, whether you bring consciousness to it and just say, I notice how I'm feeling during it, any way you can experience a binge, you will transform a binge. So that is the main message here, is there's nothing to feel ashamed about. And then also bring your toughest self into the conversation. In our Harry Potter lesson of the day, we had a moment again where Harry had to save himself. It's going to be you. You are the cavalry you're waiting for, and you can do it. And when we mean you can do it, it doesn't mean you can stop binging. It means you can be there for yourself. And I know you can be there mm-hmm. for yourself.
And remember that this, as Michelle said, this is a transformation. It's a journey. So if you tried all three models, which parts of each model fit best with you? You can make your own model depending on, you know, pulling from the things that benefited you from each piece. And again, that might look different over time, but you have, we know that you have the full capability of doing this. It's just really honestly about exploring yourself and getting curious with how you're feeling.